reason I wanted to talk to you guys about this particular topic, about learning, having the right eyes to see the right things, is because of the Parsha. Right? Whatever's going on in the Parsha, that's a sign from Hashem that that's what we got to be focusing on. So what I'm talking about is a different reaction that Kalev had versus the spies. Okay? What am I talking about? I'll read the verses inside. Okay? This was a response of the Meraglim, when they saw the land of Israel. God tells them, go to the land of Israel. What do they say? We can't go up. Why? It's, they're too strong. The land eats its inhabitants. And they're very tall. We were like grasshoppers in their eyes. And that's what we look like in their eyes. We look like grasshoppers. That's what the spies say. What does Caliph say? Right? Where did Bnei Akiva get it from? From Caliph? Yeah, it turns out that Caliph was Bnei Akiva. But Yerashnu Oto, Ki Yechol Nuchala. We can do it. We can do it. And my question, my holy friends, is why is it that Kalev saw the exact same land that they saw, and Yeshua saw the exact same land, and they had this, we can do it, attitude, and the rest of the Meraglim saw it and said, we have no chance, we can't do it. What's the difference?
Because they were doing it for their own selfish interests, the other 10.
Okay, so Ben's saying they were looking at it, they were only doing it for them, they weren't doing it for the claw. I like that answer, interesting. What else? I want to hear other answers. What else do you guys think? Why was it that one of these groups was able to see, saw, and got so scared, and the other was not scared at all? Any other thoughts?
Because they didn't want to lose their position.
Okay, so again, maybe self-interest. Okay, good. When you have self-interest, you look at things completely differently. Very often, 100%.
They lost faith,
and my question is like, well, why?
Sorry, because they looked weak compared to the other nations.
Because they were scared.
Right.
They were intimidated.
They
don't want to change.
It's a very human thing. If people start losing faith in God in our world, if they're confronted with some harsh.
For sure, but Caleb's also human. So why is this human successful and this human So the answer is an open-ended question. There is no answer. There's no one answer. But I thought it was a great springboard to talk about the concept of optimism versus pessimism. Because it's not just an amazing, important topic from a Torah perspective, it's an amazing, important topic for life. And it will lead us into also cultivating a gratitude attitude in prayer and in life. Okay? So that's where we're going. I'm giving you this super duper quick version, unfortunately, just because I don't have enough time. But if you guys want, I could send you the longer, more in-depth version. Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay. So talking about, what I want to prove to you first is that optimists are much more successful in life, okay? Then what I want to prove to you is that you can actually become more optimistic and happy in your life. It's not just good, okay, there's some happy people and some sad people, but you can change. And then what I want to do finally is demonstrate a little bit how we can actually manifest more optimism and gratitude in our lives on a practical level, and then we're going to do it, okay? That's the plan, all the next 45 minutes or so. Excited? This literally can be a life-changing shiur if you want it to be, if you choose it to be. Okay. So, optimists are much more successful than pessimists. This is clearly proven in many, many different realms of life, but I'm just going to give you a few examples. Okay? So, we'll start off with this guy. I don't know if you guys know him. You're from Australia, South Africa. You know this guy?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. MJ. All right. Michael Jordan. I used to hate him. Because I was a Knicks fan, he would make me lose every playoffs, and I was very sad. But now I like him because he helps my shears. And he has a great quote. He's arguably the best basketball player ever, and he writes, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed. So what is MJ saying? What's the Torah of MJ? Why is his failure his success? What's the connection?
Perseverance.
He
perseveres, he works, and I think there's something even deeper.
He learns from value and failure.
He learns it from it, and he's not afraid to fail. He even sees the value in failure. That's crucial. There's so many people in life who their failure is not because they failed, but because they don't even try. Because they tried once, didn't work out, they gave up. They're scared. Not MJ. MJ was willing to take that shot over and over and over again, even though he failed 26 times, because he knew that one of these days he's going to hit, and he kept working harder. Okay? And there's a lot of famous optimists. One of them, Kalev Ben Yefuna, we shall surely overcome. Another famous one is Robert Kennedy. He says something similar. Only those who dare to fail can ever achieve greatly. Okay? If you can fail greatly, you can achieve greatly.
It's those who believe you can change the world are the ones who do.
Exactly. And Thomas Edison invented lots of cool stuff with the light bulb. And he said, I failed my way to success. He'd always be failing until he... You know where we learn this Torah from, actually, the best? Video games. Video games teach us this. What happens when you lose?
Restart.
No biggie. Start again. Right? Video games have a big... Not saying you spend all your time video games, but there's a big teaching there. Mess up, start again. No biggie. Okay? That's the attitude that an optimist has, and that's why optimists are successful in life, whereas pessimists are not. I'll give you a cute story. Two salesmen, they go to Africa in the 1900s, and they are trying to sell shoes, and they see one of them writes back, we have no chance, it's hopeless. They don't even wear shoes here. What does the second guy write back? Amazing, glorious opportunity. Why? They don't have shoes yet. We can sell them shoes. We can be the first. Right? All about your attitude. It's all about your perspective. Okay. In other words, I'll put it differently. An optimistic explanatory style, when you face adversity, when things go wrong, is the key to success in life. What do I mean by that? It means when you fail, when you don't get that job, when you don't get into that college, when you ask that girl out and she says no, or when she dumps you. What do you say? It's not that bad. It'll get better. That's optimist. What does a pessimist say?
That's it.
It's terrible. It's really bad. And it's never going to change. And everything stinks. Have you ever met somebody like that, guys?
Yeah.
Right? Don't marry that girl. Okay? If you figure out that she's that type of girl, run away. Okay? You want the first type of girl. Or guy. Friend.
Richard.
Okay.
You're an optimist.
Good.
I don't know.
That's good. The truth is, sometimes in certain things in life, you can be an optimist in one area and a pessimist in another area. So, what you're good at, usually more optimistic about. When you're not so good at, it's harder. Okay, I found this out the hard way. I've always been good at learning and sports, so I thought I was an optimist. Then I got to the army, which I was terrible at, and I realized I wasn't so optimistic there. So everyone has their strengths and not so strengths, and we all have what to work upon.
What sports do you play?
Almost all, mainly football and basketball and ultimate frisbee.
Which football?
Baseball.
Our football. They're both. Oh, and I love all sports.
We are going to soccer tonight. Do you want to come?
Yeah, but not too much. What's that?
Australian football.
You can teach me. Teach me. But I might die.
Have you ever played cricket?
No. Okay. Anyways, again, I'm going super duper fast only because I don't have time. Okay? A few more proofs that optimists are much more successful in life. Okay? Martin Seligman is the founder of positive psychology. Positive psychology is what I'm basing a lot of these studies on. Positive psychology means if you're only 20, 30 years old has become popular, studying how to be happy in life, basically. Not what makes you sad and what makes you depressed, but what makes us happy. Things like gratitude and blah, blah, blah. Okay? So he found that in MetLife, which is a sales company, what distinguished between successful salesmen and the unsuccessful salesman? What's the main characteristic between somebody who's going to succeed in business and somebody who's going to fail? Can you guess? Based on the preface that I gave you before?
Optimism.
The one who has an optimistic explanatory style. In other words, when you make a call and somebody rejects you, what does an optimist say?
They're probably
the next person.
I'll call them. We'll get them next time. What does a pessimist say?
They hate me.
They hate me. Right? 57% more effective were optimists than pessimists. I'll give you another study. In the U.S. military, first-year cadets who had an optimistic explanatory style were far more successful. Which makes sense because when you're faced with adversity, What do some people want to do? They want to
quit.
But an optimist. Sorry?
These studies are hard to conduct because it's like black and white. Like, this person's optimist, this person's not.
Yes, when I they have to figure it out, their style, but there are ways of surveying people to figure out basically how they respond to different scenarios.
Carol Dweck calls it a growth mindset.
Indeed. Indeed. Nachon, which is a key to life, because you don't want to change someone to succeed, you want to change someone to value the process in getting there. Excellent. Very, very related. Swimmers, baseball players, in all sports, who are the ones who are the most successful? The optimists, which is why at the end of a game, what do they usually say at the press conference when the team loses? What do they say? Do they blame it on the ref? Ideally, generally, they say, no, it was my bad. We'll learn.
Coaches will blame it.
Well, then that's not such an optimist. Okay, even physically, people who have a coronary bypass surgery, people who had heart attack, who physically gets better quicker? Optimists. Your body actually responds to your mind. Okay, so in so many different realms of life, optimism makes a huge difference. Let me give you an exercise. Imagine right now, you went into a bank. There's 50 people there in the bank. A robber walks in and fires his weapon once. You're shot in the right arm. You're honestly describing this event to your friend. How many people would describe this as a lucky event, honestly? And how many people here would describe it as an unlucky event? An unlucky day or a lucky day? You got shot in the arm and you walked into the bank.
One shot.
Who here would say they're unlucky?
Extremely unlucky. Because every other day you've never got shot.
Yeah. Who here
so
would?
I'm going to get shot and be like, yes.
You got shot again. You could be dead.
Okay.
So the guard died.
Who here?
If you're on the arm.
Guys, who here would say that was a very lucky day? Okay.
Not so, very lucky. Not in the head. It's lucky.
Yeah.
So, right, so, guys, the truth is...
I think you can be very grateful that your opportunity died.
Right.
It's a very cool man that he got shot.
And the guy fired one shot.
But what do you stress? But what do you stress? You stress... What do you stress to your friend?
The chance of him not getting here because there's so many other people. And he happens to, like, fail.
So the truth is... There is no truth. It's all... How you look at it. It's all in your head. You can look at it and say, I'm so unlucky. And you can look at it and frame it that I am lucky. Wow, I could have gotten killed. I could have lost my head. At least I'm alive. There is no truth. It's all how you frame it. Okay? And changing our framing of how we look at life and how we frame things is one of the main keys to living a happy life and to responding to adversity. Yeah.
When you talk about lucky or unlucky, you can talk about probabilities. And it's like people that, like, let's say work in like insurance companies who have to work out like probabilities of people being in a car accident. They can like actually work out whether like you have been unlucky or not. Like whether you've hit the statistical.
There's some sort of objective way of measuring it, but most things in life like this, it's completely subjective. It's what I determine whether I'm a lucky guy or not. And the interesting thing,
the event in itself could be unlucky. Maybe you can perceive
it. Depends how you're looking at it. In this particular context,
this event was not going to happen. The fact that this
The people who look at themselves as lucky people actually end up being more successful and end up having more lucky things happen to them. It's a whole different study.
Okay,
because if you view yourself as a... I'll tell you what, because this is a great lead-in. Because if you view yourself as a lucky person, you're going to keep pushing forward and good things are going to happen to you. But if you view yourself as an unlucky person, you're going to give up. This is called learned helplessness, right? Martin Seligman also talks about this in a famous study where basically these dogs, but they did the same thing with humans, learned that no matter what they did, they were going to get shocked, one group of dogs. And another group of dogs didn't learn that, and they were just, you know, regular dogs. And then there was a different scenario where both groups of dogs could have easily escaped. But what happened? The dogs who had earlier learned that they were helpless and thought that there's no point, they just lied down and got shocked. Whereas the other dogs, who never learned to be helpless, just kept, went to freedom easily. Right? Or with humans, one group was told, turn on all the lights in this loud room. Okay? And then it never went off. The noise, no matter how many buttons they pushed, it never went off. The other group turned off the buttons and it went off. Then they went into a second scenario. group A didn't even bother. Even though if they would have pushed the buttons, the noise would have went off. Okay? Whereas the second group turned off the noise. This is so important to life. Learned helplessness. Because I think this explains the story of the Meraglim. The story of the spies. What happened with the spies? They go to the land of Israel. They see these giants. And what happens to them? They learned helplessness. When did they learn to be helpless? Probably. I mean, we don't know. In Egypt. They were slaves for a long time. So they probably learned all those times they called out to God or they tried and they just got beaten. And then they misapplied their psychology to the wrong situation and they just gave up. Suppose in Caleb and Yeshua, for whatever reason, I'm not sure why, they were able to overcome that. From? Yehuda, and Ephraim. So not Levi. So they were, yeah. So that's not the explanation. We're not sure. I don't know. I don't have the explanation. But there are people who are able to rise above it. Okay? But this is so true so often in life. We give up even before we start. Because earlier in our life, we were traumatized and whatever. And we don't realize times have changed. Life's different now. Right? This happens a lot in dating. Right? A guy asks a girl out. A guy goes, another shidduch date. A guy's another dating, whatever. And at a certain point, they just give up. And other people just keep pushing and keep pushing. And eventually, they find the right one. Because they never give up. In Shumir. What? Like, I never saw it, but I'll assume so. Gewalt. Okay.